So technically, this is episode 6, I think, of the podcast. Probably not a very good way to introduce the podcast, is it? Hey guys, this is episode 6 of the Leverage Podcast. Yeah, right?
In a world. You improve yourself.
And
episode 6.
We got a guest in person live here today by the name of Jason Jew. Not his real last name, so it doesn't matter if I fuck it up. It's Joe, right?
Yeah. Definitely refuses to pronounce it correctly.
I refuse to as well.
It's fine. Everyone can, I mean, I make fun of it all the time, so it's not a big deal.
So you guys should all know Jason from the group. He's our one of the few resident fashion experts. We're going to ask him some questions about that. You've basically, the reason I wanted to have you on the call today is you're like a really good example of a guy who has made a huge like life transformation, like completely changed your lifestyle from what you were doing before.
Yeah.
And that's not easy. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of motivation. Obviously.
Remember when I first worked with you back in LA too, like I've been, for those who don't know, I've known Robbie for like probably 7 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Close to 7 or 8 years. So when I first started working with him, I was living in LA, working at Boeing, like doing nothing with my life really. And then now since moved to New York and doing a lot more stuff. So still not enough, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, a lot more than you're fucking doing. So,
yeah.
So you know, that's why I wanted to have you on the call to kind of talk about that progression that you've gone through. I think it'd be really helpful for other guys to hear.
Sure.
You know, what worked, what didn't work, stumbling blocks. I've got a bunch of questions to ask. So why don't you kind of paint the picture of what the fuck you were doing when we met at Boeing, a little bit about your background,
So I'm, for those that don't know, I'm from Seattle originally. I pretty much stayed in Washington. I actually grew up in a small town in Eastern Washington, then moved to Seattle when I was 11. Went to college in Eastern Washington. So I was pretty much only in Washington State, very small town mindset. But I was always pretty ambitious. Like I've always wanted to move to New York since I was like 8, but I was just very scared all the time. I still work through that a lot.
You have an older sister and a younger brother.
Yeah.
Right?
Older sister, 5 years older, and brother that's 10 years younger than me. So it's very large gap. So I'm not close to pretty much anybody in my sibling tree. I mean, we get along and we talk to each other every now and then, but it's definitely not like call each other every night. Same thing with my parents. So it's kind of a relationship I have, which is pretty, I don't know if that's typical of Asian families, but I don't know. I feel like all Asian families are very anti, emotional. Like you don't call them up and say, hi, how was your day? Anyway, so after college, I knew I had an offer from Microsoft and an offer from Boeing. But the offer from Boeing was to go to LA or, specifically Orange County at the time, to move. And I didn't know anything about LA other than that it supposedly had great weather and hot girls. So that's why I chose to move. And I made the decision in like 5 minutes. So I moved there, did that for a while. Long story short, end up breaking up with a girl that, you know, I was a typical way too nice guy, like way too overly invested. Like if you see some of the text messages, you know, like all those like desperate text messages that people send, like all those like way too involved, like sending really long emails, like that type of stuff happened with me. I've always dealt with depression in my life. But at that point, I decided to go get some help. So I went to see a therapist. And one of the things that the therapist recommended me doing is to go like try to find out the areas that I wanted to improve and find help in those areas. And so I kind of made up my mind that, you know, like, I don't know if it was like based out of like revenge or something like that. It was like, next time she meets me, I'm going to be like so much better at everything in life or something. I don't know. It was something like that though. And so, but from that, that's how I decided to go, look at meetups. And, I had just moved to LA just to get away from the whole situation in Orange County. And I learned about Robbie's group through, a meetup, and he was working with a guy named Brian at the time. So fast forward a little bit through there. There's a lot of stuff there that was like more, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Woo woo or whatever. Like,
Before you go into that, what does your dating life look like at the time? What was your life at that? What was like your
non-existent weekly, pretty much?
What was your weekly?
Pretty much there was like,
and what did you do on a typical like Tuesday, Friday, and
so I went to a lot of concerts. Tuesday, so at least I was like pretty active in the music scene. Like I was going about two shows a week, or at least one show a week. I made friends fairly easily, and but because you know, in a city like LA, and plus I move around a lot, there's a lot of transplants, there's a lot of people moving. So I'd gotten kind of used to making new friends all the time because other friends have been moving. So that was not really a problem to find stuff to do, but definitely dating was more like there's two or three girls I have a crush on but never act on, you know, that typical like high school like movie type of thing where the guy's like, oh, that girl, she's so pretty. Like, if only she knew who I really was type of mentality. Yeah. That was really wrong. You know, it's like, it's easy to see that now, but at the time, you know, that was the way I was. So
you had like a few girls they had a crush on, but yeah, you didn't know how to.
And well, at the specific time that I met you, there was like, I was still trying to get over the one girl, right? So like that girl was just like blew my mind. So anyway, so that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was kind of like my date, like little dating, if any.
Yeah. And then, so what would you do for fun? You just go to concerts and shit?
Concerts, bars, like, I was in a kickball league. I used to be in a softball league, but then, like, it was hard. That was in Orange County, so joined a kickball league. And I was working. Basically not really doing anything, so.
And your background's in engineering, right?
Yeah, computer engineering, but I was pretty much doing project management, account management at Boeing. So
you'd hang out with your friends, do the fucking kickball thing, yeah. go to bars, yeah. Drink, but wouldn't really hit on girls, wouldn't have dates. How many dates would you say you were getting, like, on average?
I think I went, like, until I met you, I've been on, like, just outside of that one girl, been on, like, two dates.
Really?
In the past 5 years of L.A. So, like, I'm in L.A.
You've been in L.A. for 5 years before you met me.
Yeah, or no, maybe, like, four.
And this was 7 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And how old were you at the time? You're like,
I met you when I was 25, I think.
Okay.
Or 24. No, 20. Must have been younger than that. 24. So probably.
Yeah. Okay.
24.
So and that relationship you had was when?
When I was 23.
Okay. Got 24. It.
Around that time frame. I'm sorry. It's been so long. I don't know. I'm not good with timelines anymore. But yeah, yeah. Basically, even in LA, just in general, I just never went on many dates. I was never like, I wasn't like, I'll talk about one of the exercises I did with Cameron and Elmar. And we guys remember Elmar, but yeah, like just was really focused on like, I thought that like it was all in my head. And like, if I could fix like how I thought of the situation, I would like magically get girls, you know, like,
what do you mean by that?
I felt like it was a confidence thing, which is one reason why I was attracted to your company. I was like, oh, inner confidence, that's what I need.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, I had read the game at one point, but wasn't really using like, you know, it looked kind of silly to me. So I was like,
okay, yeah, what did you do before you came to me?
Yeah. I read the game, but that wasn't like, nothing serious about that. So
yeah,
so pretty much nothing. And the one thing that I had that I think other people didn't have is I didn't have exposure to good role models from that perspective. Like I had some friends that were very good with girls, some other friends that were like really self-confident, even if they weren't chasing after tens, but they were like, this is what I'm after, and like that's what I'm going to smash, like tons of fives and sixes, you know. And there's something to be said about that.
And how did we talk about this? You know, the dork force,
yeah,
that cousin, for example. How did you, like, why were these guys who were really solid hanging out with you? What was the friendship?
So a lot of them were either because I was in the same classes as them or I was friends with them. We had, like, a sports connection. So I've always been into sports. I'm actually not, you know, I can talk about a lot of subjects. So, like, all my friends that were into the music scene, I was clearly into that. So I had like an organizer capability. So for example, every concert that we would go to, I would oftentimes send an email out to a bunch of people and be like, hey, here's like shows that are coming up. So a lot of people got to know me from that. And that's how I actually brought girls and guys together.
Yeah.
And,
socialize.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you did a lot of cool shit. You invited people out just from the pure like dating side of it.
didn't have anything.
Exactly. I was just, I was too,
and I still have this problem now where I'm too, like, non-sexual, right? Like, I wouldn't hit on girls. I would just be like, oh, cool, let's go to this concert, and, like, stand, like, 10 feet away from them type deal. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's pretty typical.
A
lot of guys.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of guys can relate to that. That was pretty much exactly how I was, too. Almost to a T. Did a lot of, you know, extracurricular activities. Yeah. I just didn't.
Exactly. My dick was not one of those extracurricular activities.
I feel like that's a mindset of someone who just, you know, I feel like the biggest problem for a guy like you or a guy like how we used to be, because you don't have like a structured way to basically express your attraction, your desire in a way that's like not weird, awkward, creepy.
Yeah.
And
that plus I was never really big on taking risks. I mean, like most Asian families.
That's a big one too.
Yeah. Most Asian families drastically discouraged taking risks, right? They're like, play it safe. My mom was very risk averse. My aunt's very risk averse. My dad's a little more risk taking, but you know, it's just like, it was grilled into my mindset that like, don't take risks basically. So,
yeah.
So that was another problem.
So to give you guys a little bit of background, you know, what was it? 7 years ago or 5 years ago when we met, inner confidence looked a lot different than it does now. Like you said, I had a different business partner. And at the time, he was running most of the curriculum. I was doing more of the business type of stuff. I wasn't as involved as a coach like I am now. And, you know, there was a lot of silly exercises we'd have people do.
I
have some of the old guys, but the camping trip. And
I did not go on that one. there was definitely stuff that, like,
it wasn't as structured and it wasn't as, like, do this, do that, do that, and here's the mindset. It wasn't nearly as, you know, as developed of a, you know, of a curriculum. But at the time, what'd you do? What'd you get out of it? But
so
then there was a break where we didn't work together, and we'll get into
that. Yeah, so there's a few. So for a while, I worked with Robbie and stuff on this stuff, and I actually got a lot of interesting things out of it. One was the whole, like, tension, like, looking people in the eye and getting tension like that. There's actually a trip I went to in Europe in between. I don't know how, I forget exactly when this happened, but like I've been working with Robbie and then for a while I went to Europe for a trip to go with some friends and I like got laid in Europe, like just basically like using eye contact and just interest and stuff like that. And it was actually really eye opening experience. But the problem was I didn't really know what the hell I was doing. Like I couldn't break it down and be like, this is why that was good. Because the curriculum was more like just be and like feel this and then you'll do all the right actions, right? And so that was one issue that I had with probably the curriculum. It wasn't repeatable as well as some stuff we have now. But anyway, so like there was eye contact was one thing. I met a lot of really cool people like Cameron Harris. I met through that Elmar, who isn't in the group, but he was a really good friend of mine from those days, and we would go out a lot. So the, you know, like finding good wingmen is possibly hard. For those of you that have tried, you guys probably know this. It's like finding a guy that's willing to like help you out and like push you and all those stuff would be pretty difficult. So the other thing that I was doing was trying to figure out what the fuck I wanted to do with my life, career wise. I knew at the time my goal was, you know, when I first got out of college was to work for like a Fortune 500 company, try to be an executive level there. And then I realized I did not want to do that at all. And that kind of like basically made me confused. So, I remember I came to you actually, and I was like, actually thinking about putting together different business ideas. So I was asking Robbie to help me with some of that stuff, which eventually never went anywhere. Cause then I just started looking for a new job after that. But, so that went on for a while. So a lot of it was also just getting comfortable in social situations. I've always been super, I still get a lot of anxiety, but I wouldn't show it as much and I would be desensitized to it. One of the things that was nice is also my neighbor was a DJ and her mom was like a former bodybuilder and stuff like that. So like hanging out with her and like being friends with her, like got me into like a really weird, like kind of like DJ party scene, stuff like that. So I was getting desensitized to a lot of the crazy stuff that other people probably don't normally see, which was good. because that's like a lot of what LA lifestyle is, right? Like, so now if I go to a club and I see people doing like coke and like people just pulling people off the girls, having like three-way makeouts, it doesn't really faze me, even if it's not something I necessarily
get all excited.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of it was desensitization. Also, a little bit of it was just confidence that like there is a way to get better. I think that was a mentality. I forget what post it was, but Shalev was talking about like how people have fixed mentality and growth mindsets.
Yeah.
I was definitely always a fixed mindset person, and part of my identity was I was really intelligent. But if there was somebody smarter than me, I just felt really defeated by that because I was like, oh, wow, well, I guess I can't get smarter than them, which sounds really silly now if you think about it, right. But like, it's still something I struggle
with. There's so many smart people that are broke.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like, you know, just they don't have a lot in their life, you know?
Yeah.
They found that IQ has pretty much zero impact on your,
exactly.
your wealth.
Exactly. It's kind of like the jock in high school that stays like in the small town high school, except for with intelligence, right? It's like the same mindset. So I didn't really work on like growing. I didn't think about developing new skills or anything like that. So that was kind of where I was at.
So when you started, like, so your introduction to personal growth was through this sort of thing. And did you immediately kind of take on the notion that when you start improving your dating life, you're really improving everything? Or
no, not for, I mean, I kept those pretty separate. And I was a little bit into like reading self-help and like, but I was more into like the theories behind it. I don't know. It was all weird. I did think of like dating and like, I think part of the problem was I still couldn't see the vision. Like there was like no, like it was just kind of like, oh, you're going to get better. And I was like 0 to 100 basically. It's like kind of like there was no like path set up that you could vision like improving. Well,
yeah.
So I didn't see myself improving in phases. So
I was actually going to ask you. So tell me a little bit like how, what you noticed about how your results changing, and was it, so you said you didn't see like consistent results, like change, but you'd feel like you're treading water for a while and then bam, like something would happen there.
So what happened was, so a few things happened that were specifically important to this. One was Cameron, I, and Elmar decided to go out every night for like 2 or 3 months. I can't remember, like literally every, like Sunday through Sunday, right? Like every night.
I
did that. Yeah, we did. It was like, Elmar had a lot of hangouts with him. Like Cameron's actually pretty cool, but just, you know, like a stoner all the time. But like we all were like trying to get better. And but the thing was, like, we didn't have any like approach. Like we didn't have like lines, we didn't have anything like that. So we would just go out and hang out, and just like try to like be like into the crowd and like talk and stuff. So we went to the Abbey a bunch. We went to all these different places. We had like different places to go each night. Like, you know, Renee's on Tuesday. I remember that was like a fetish spot of time. Like there was like exactly. So like there's just all this stuff that we did, that alone helped me gain confidence of just like being around people. I've never been really good in large groups of people. Like I'm much better in like a small party or like a smaller bar or a less crowded bar than I've been in a really crowded bar. So I was good for that. And also just, it does build your confidence just by like being around other people that even just thinking that your confidence can improve is a thing that will improve your confidence. If that makes sense. It's like a roundabout way of saying that, you are what you believe, right? After that, for a while, I was doing a tall drive for KCRW. They have these like, KCRW is a radio station in Santa Monica. It's like a listener radio station. And so they have like a fundraiser every time. And usually you work the call center and volunteer, and they have like really good music. And then they have like a party at some bar afterwards, like at the end of the thing. So I went to the party and I met, me and my friend were there and I met a girl there, right? So, and I never would have been able to like flirt with her in that way with like flirty intent and stuff like that without this training, for sure. Like it was definitely like, I felt more confident. I felt like I had the conversation, like where I was driving the conversation as opposed to just being like, okay, what's going on? So that felt really good. And then I don't know why, like I stopped kind of working with you guys for a while. I think at the time what was happening was I was,
Me and Brian went our separate ways.
Yeah. You guys split up, and then I don't know what happened exactly, but then like,
Well, I started working with some business stuff, and then I started looking for a job. I think
you're going to start a company.
Yeah, to help people like get raises at large companies and stuff like that. But then I immediately was like so sick of Boeing that I wanted to find a new job and move to New York. That was kind of like some big things.
Yeah, so why did you want to move to New York? What it seems like you had like a pretty big lifestyle change in that moment, or
yeah.
maybe you wanted to move to New York. I remember asking me like travel and.
So
you had gone to Europe and you came back and it's like, fuck LA, I want to move to New York.
Well, it was, so I didn't like LA when I was living there, which is weird because I like LA so much better after I left. Like I learned to appreciate more things about LA now that I'm not there. I was sick of one was that people were more transient all the time. So I was sick of making new friends all the time. I was like, oh, this is so annoying. And, so I decided that like, if I was going to have to make new friends all the time, I might as well go to like a city like New York where I can focus on my career. New York was a much better environment for tech companies. I know Siobhan's probably going to hate that comment, but I think it's true. Like it's a little more fast paced there. People are more career focused. So, and also I was like about 20, I think I was 26 or 27 at the time. And I was like, fuck it. Like if I'm not going to do it now, then I'm never going to do it. Right. So, and I, like I said, I've wanted to live in New York since I was 8. So I basically just started looking for any job I could that was reasonably transferable. And also the other problem was like my career was a dead end at Boeing, so I needed to switch career tracks. So there's a lot of reasons. And I was looking at San Francisco, LA, Chicago, and New York were the four I was looking at. And I just happened to get to New York first. I've always been kind of like a really impulsive mover. Like I move around like almost every 2 years.
Yeah.
And now with AMTV, I move around almost like every year or less. That part wasn't really, I've always been able to make like start from scratch changes.
So you've seen that as time has gone on, you're moving more and you're more flexible now than you've ever had. Yeah. That's an important point.
Not only that, not just flexibility, but like, I feel like, it's less scary to move. Like a lot of people never move from like their small towns to a bigger city because they're totally freaked out by it, right?
Right.
And I've never had that problem. But I've always had the problem of like, do I really want to settle down? I have the opposite problem where I get like, I'm like, oh no, I don't want to be a New Yorker. I don't want to be an LA person, right? Like, I just want to be a person in the world or something. I don't know.
All right. So you get to New York, you're living here, you're working, you're living in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
And what's your lifestyle like in New York between, you know, for however long you were here until we met again in, that was like May of 2012, I think.
2012?
Yeah.
In New York, I'd honestly just been working my ass off. I've never worked really harder than I have in New York City. I was trying to make some new friends. At the time I was like really into hipsters. So I was living in like Bushwick. My first experience in New York was I was living in Dumbo, working in Dumbo, like 10 minute walk because in a loft space, which is like all my dreams of like living in New York City, which is walking to work and living in a loft.
Yeah.
And, then 3 months later, the city rezoned us. So like my first experience in New York City was after 3 months, the city kicks you out of your home and you have to find a new one. Like, so that was pretty, it was a pretty rude awakening to New York City. Right. So I've always been understanding that New York is a pretty brutal town at times, where you have to fight. So I've always been like, always fighting. So, one of the other things I was doing was trying to pay off debt and travel a lot more. So I've been to like Argentina. I went to Portugal. I went to some other places, just traveling. So that's kind of all I was doing. I was saving money to travel, paying off debt.
When you were traveling, were you like, Was there any sort of like sex travel component to it?
No,
that
was
weird for me. But like, the only traveling that I give a fuck about is like sex tourism. Yeah. Almost. No.
Well, we talked about this yesterday, right?
Like, I'm just so girl crazy that like I would never want to go anywhere where there's like not a huge like awesome time that could be had.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe as I get older, I'll start to appreciate museums and culture a little bit more. But
I've always thought of travel as seeing crazy experiences that you can't see here, right?
Yeah.
So you can't have sex here, so that's like not always what I do. But like, for example, when I went to Argentina, one, it was for a friend's wedding.
Yeah.
So I was trying to hit on all those like bridesmaids, but apparently they didn't speak English that well. Or they were at least the hot ones did not. And then I was in Argentina, I actually was hanging out with a couple Brazilians and we were like
catcalling girls like all around the city. They taught me like how to say some broken Spanish of like basically like, do you want to get some? No, it was because they were in Argentina, so it was Spanish.
Oh, Argentina. You know,
they were there speaking. They were there. Yeah, okay. Yeah. The two Brazilian guys.
Yeah,
with. So we were trying to run up to girls, asking them if they want some cups of wine or something. Like that,
so you did a little bit of that, but
yeah,
it was mostly brotherly.
Yeah, but it was mostly like to see my friend's wedding, and then I went to Patagonia on a whim to see like a bunch of penguins, which were dope as shit. When I went to Portugal, I wanted to learn how to surf, so I was trying to flirt with girls there, but it was kind of like an off-season time, like because it's cheaper to travel then. So I don't go to places without that in mind, but I don't go to places for that in mind, right?
And then when you're like back in New York, you know, what was your lifestyle like in terms of dating, social life? Was it similar to what you had in LA where you were still going to a lot of concerts?
I stopped going to both concerts just for work and stuff. My dating life was a little better, but not good, right? Like I still had a long ways to go. Like,
yeah.
I couldn't consistently create dates at all. I think I went on, like, maybe 4 or 5 dates, which was a huge improvement over L.A., but
yeah,
definitely not.
And did you have wingmen that you were going out with?
That was the biggest problem in New York City, was that, like, I was so focused on work that all the people that I hung out with were coworkers, and if you work in tech, you'll probably know that many of those guys are not the best people to go out with. There was a few guys that were really cool that I would go out with, and they were good with women. They were like friends from Jersey. So they had this like really insular, like friend network group. So I was always felt like an outsider there. And, so I was going out trying to meet new people. And like, I had another group of friends that were living in Brooklyn that were friends with, they were cool, like frat dudes, that I knew each other through another friend, but they were like, they didn't really hang out in like bars where you could pick up girls. And we did that. We did it a little bit, but it was definitely like a lot of them were coupled up. So it was kind of like just drinking. Right.
So
it's hard to find people to go out with.
Right. And I remember when we met for lunch, I was asking you about your dating life. You said you're dating like one girl that you met on OkCupid.
No. So I met a girl that from work. That's what I met.
Okay.
Yeah. I hadn't done OkCupid that stringently.
But the whole reason like you came on was I redid your profile.
Yeah. I think the idea was like we were catching up and then you said like you do the profile for me.
Yeah. And I gave you a free month of the group. We had just started the group maybe like a month before that. So, you know, this was, maybe it was later than that. Maybe it was after I came back from Europe, I think. This was right after your
because you were living
this
in
like September
with your girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah, I was living with Lena. This was in September of like 2000, maybe like November 2012, something like that. We started the group in like November 2012. So right around the same time. So what did you notice? So then you got in the group. I remember you weren't very active for like the first couple months. And then all of a sudden, like, You came to play.
So I think I was misunderstood when like you were like giving a preview. I thought like I wasn't allowed to participate. That's probably why like the first month I was kind of like, I don't know if I should become.
Yeah.
I mean, like I didn't want to be like, because I thought it was like a free thing, trial thing. So I didn't want to be like messing up the group dynamics or anything.
Yeah.
But a couple things. So I broke up that one girl. Luckily that didn't blow up in my face because I work with her. We're actually still cool, but and then I found out that like Anish and or Adam and Cameron were in the group who I knew from back in IC days, the old IC days. So like that was one of the impetuses why I stayed, because I was kind of like, oh, these guys are cool people that I know.
Yeah.
I just kind of like just decided to do it, I guess. And also some of the structure that you guys had was much better this time around, right?
Yeah.
So, and I was getting some results from the OkCupid profile, which is interesting since I've since like deactivated it because I forgot the password. I can't get back into the account. And then plus like Tinder smashing in New York is like so much better.
Yeah.
So that's basically why I started the group again. And, that's when you guys were doing approach videos like with in the New York City when you were filming it from Jesse's Union Square place.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was way more interesting this time around because there were demonstrations of what you're supposed to do. Which is a huge selling point for me, at least, because I like seeing examples.
Right.
I want to go from there.
So tell us how your results started to change as you, and tell us how your lifestyle started to kind of evolve this time around.
So since then, I've been really approaching things on three fronts. And I'm getting better at honing that what I want to do. Like, I could talk a little bit about that later. So one was, I knew I needed to get a better social circle. It was really hard to find wingmen. It still took me a really long time to find wingmen to go out with. So basically until like I met Patrick, and then we started going out regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Before then, like pretty much everyone in the New York group, like wasn't really going out together at all or anything like that. So that was one. Two was to figure out career-wise what I wanted to do a little more. Like, you guys had like a pretty good, like with Jesse, was talking about like building all this business stuff that I knew I wanted to learn, but I never had anyone to teach me, because like it's not like they have like how to invest in a business or how to like find product market fit on a normal basis. Or at least I didn't know about it, right? And then third was dating life. Obviously, I wanted to get better at that. And with the new curriculum that you guys set up, it felt more tangible. Because there was like, first, well, I remember in the first days, you guys were like, first of all, you're going to approach a million girls and you're going to get shut down by everyone, right? Yeah. And that, like, weirdly enough, that was comforting, because they're like, because if you suck, like, you feel like you're like, oh, it's part of the process, because Robbie said I was going to suck for a while.
Yeah.
And like, so it felt more like there was like concrete steps to take.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys have gotten even better at breaking those concrete steps down since then. Well, before that, I felt like I was either like awesome with the girl or terrible with the girl. There was like no varying degrees of subtlety. So I started improving on all those things. One of the things I did was I switched to a different division in my company, because the current division I was at was kind of terrible with their management structure. And then I started looking at alternative forms of income. So one of my ideas for a while was, so this all spurred from the Europe trip. So Jesse like calls me up, and you have to understand, at this time I had never really talked to Jesse at all. Like, besides seeing his post, and his posts are pretty over the top, hyperbolic at times, but he was pretty intense. So Robbie already told me about the Europe trip, and it's a pretty expensive trip, right? It's, and I mean, like, you can rationalize, you understand the rationality behind it, but anytime someone tells you you're going to have to spend $10,000 that you don't really have, you're kind of like, I don't know. So Jesse calls me up. He's like, listen, motherfucker, I'm going to hard sell you on this motherfucker, right? He basically is like, this is what you need to do, because Robbie's the same way. I'm going to put your back against the wall, and because of that, you're going to then find new ways to make money. That's basically like how we sold it, right?
Yeah.
And so from there, I started looking at different ways to make money, which actually I never actually implemented any of those things, because we ended up doing a payment plan, and I figured out different ways to like pay off the debt. But it then got me thinking about how can I make more money in different ways, and seeing some of Jesse's examples of hustling was really inspiring from that perspective, which fast forward a year or two later is how I end up getting into Airbnb. Which I'm not really going to go too detailed on, unless you have specific questions, because we've talked a lot about how to do Airbnb.
Yeah.
If anybody has any specific questions, you can PM me about it. And so I got a place with my brother, and then when he moved back to Seattle, I basically started Airbnb at full time. And since then, it's been kind of like crazy lifestyle. I remember 2 or 3 months where I was living out of a suitcase, staying at Patrick's place or like James's place or like my friend's place. So that was finance-wise, right? Dating-wise, I started approaching more and more girls, and it's been a slow process for that, I will say. Like, I think I was definitely one of the worst in social anxieties. I don't know if, like, probably not bottom 5%, but bottom, like, below
50%. Before Europe?
Before Europe, right, when I started working with you, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I was definitely really terrible at that, didn't approach. I went to L.A. to do an approach workshop, and Robbie put me on a bet to do, like, I think it was just, like, 5 approaches a week. I don't remember what it was, but it was something like that before L.A. In L.A., I must have approached, like, 50 girls in, like, one day. And Robbie filmed me, and it was, like, a blast. Me and Cameron, one day, we were, like, dual approaching girls, like, it was just
Melrose, right?
Yeah. It was like Robbie took me out one day, and then Jesse and Robbie took me and Cameron out another day, and we were just like driving. I remember there was this one time we saw a girl and we were driving past, so we tried to catch her, but like
we were driving on the wrong side of the street, so we made a right, like, three right turns to catch her, and then, like, she, like, walked to the other side of the street, so we had to make three more right turns to catch her, and then we lost her into, like, a Whole Foods, and just, like, it was really fun, right? Like, one thing I will say is if you go hang out with Robbie and he's, like, helping you coaching your approach, it's actually a really fun time. You don't feel like it's, like, anxiety. You don't feel like it's just, like, because you feel like it's, like, a joke, and, like, and that's fun. So that was a really big improvement in just approaching. And then I think, like, shortly after, like, half a year after that, I went to Europe. After Europe, which there's a crazy story and a crazy write-up. I don't know if that post is pinned, but there's a lot of good times there.
What did you get in, what happened in Europe?
So
in terms of, like, shifts that you made?
So a couple of things that I saw were, one, I was way less intimidated by hot girls, because girls in Croatia are, like, nines and tens, and, like, coming back, it was actually, this might be a negative, because, like, I came back to New York, I was so much saltier by being rejected by, like, sixes and sevens. I was like, fuck you, I've been rejected by sevens. Yeah, exactly. But, like, one, it was a lot of fun. I did, like, go on an instant date with a girl in Europe, and I could have actually done better. I think, like, one of the biggest problems I was having was, like, I was like, just approaching, I was like, first thing, I just got approached, and then after that, I'd be like, I don't know what to do after that. I'm going to leave, you know? Like, so getting past those phases was really good. We did some club game, and seeing Robbie operate in club game and, like, having Genevieve wing and stuff like that was really interesting to see. Those are all really good experiences. Just embracing the lifestyle and mentality of, like, it's okay to want to fuck girls is, like, also another thing. And then, like, that time at Fat Baby, which I don't know if we have time to go into that story, was really eye-opening to see, like, girls sometimes just want to party and you don't even really need to talk to them that much, and it's, like, pretty fun.
Yeah, we're in a club. We got a $40 bottle, which is unheard of. Me and Genevieve pulled a couple girls back to from the dance floor back to the table, and I introduced one of the girls. I was like, hey, this is our friend Jason. He's Asian. I bet you've never made out with an Asian. And I pushed our heads together, and you started making out. The girls were all making out like crazy. Like, what was your experience? Like, have you ever, like, been a part of that?
I mean, I've seen stuff like that, but obviously not to me, and I was not participating in those things.
Okay.
And then Amish was, like, trying to, like, you pulled a different girl. Someone pulled a different girl.
I pulled another girl.
And Amish was talking to her, and he was so salty. He was like, fuck, I don't want to make that.
I tried to get her to make out with him.
Yeah. No, actually, the funny part was, like, Genevieve was like, I think we're chasing after this girl, so you should make out with the other girl. And then you made out with that girl. And then you, like, so it was, like, crazy. It was a really weird eye-opening, like, experience, weird feeling at the time. Because, like, I wasn't necessarily intimidated, but it was definitely, like, I don't really, this has never happened to me before, right?
I guess, you know, to try to put myself in your shoes, what I would have been kind of, like, totally unsure about it. Usually, like, when you make out with a girl, there's some sort of connection or some sort of, like, couple dynamic.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
And then to, like, immediately grab her friend and make out with her, and then grab another girl and make out with her. Like,
And then have them make out with each other.
Yeah.
It was totally different. And I know it sounds silly for those of the guys that have seen girls do this all the time and, like, or have experienced this, like, but it's definitely, it was definitely not novel to me.
Well, the difference is most guys are used to, like, the courtship process.
Yeah.
The process of, like, you know, connecting with the girl, then making out with her. But in a highly charged, pure, like, sexual process, it's just like a buffet of ass, right? Like, you just grab whatever's there, and you're in, like, crazy parties.
Exactly.
There's no logic to it, right? So that continued. We took him back to our Airbnb spot in Budapest, played the ice game, and then had an orgy.
It was crazy.
That was like the last night of the trip, right?
No, it was like the second to last night.
Second to last night.
It was Shaban that just left.
Yeah. Fuck your beauty. Yeah, we were just talking about that the other day in LA. Okay, so you come back from Europe.
Yeah,
and you're kind of like 2 weeks in this crazy lifestyle of, like, doing nothing but going after bitches.
Yes.
Like, that has to wear off.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, like, so since then, I've been way better at, like, all facets, between that and the LA trip, all facets of my game have been, like at least a level higher, right? And I'm not saying that there's higher levels to go. I'm just saying that, like, every facet of my game was better. I understood how to take girls on dates better. I understood how to, like, make out with girls better. There was a lot of subtle body image stuff that we went over in Europe. Like, for those of you guys who don't know me in person, I have a lot of feminine attributes, like Jesse.
at one point said I was the gayest person in the group. I think being out Dave, apparently, and we're both Asian, so I'm sure we're doing our races very proud. But like a lot of the things that I was doing, like Robbie would correct me on, and like, so there was a lot of subtle body language stuff that I can't really explain over the phone, but like you just get corrected at times and just see that. I also got to see Robbie in action a lot more. So, the videos you see Robbie of like day gaming and stuff like that, you keep seeing him in person with two girls at nighttime, is really important because you see how he talks to them. I remember there was a tactic that you used where, if two girls are like next to you on your right and left, you would like look at one girl and like put your hand on the other girl and like, or like look at the other girl, put your hand on the other girl. So it's like,
you can
keep their attention, but like not be sleazy about it. You know, like, so there's a lot of little tricks like that you were picking up, or I was picking up in Europe, especially for a guy that never touches people.
Yeah.
We also had that problem where like, I went on that instant date with a girl and I couldn't like make a move on her because I was too fucking pansy. And we had like this, like A squad team of like 18 spots, oh, yeah, and like deal with all the cock blocks. That was a really epic cock block interference.
We had like five people running interference. Yeah. Trying to get Jason to make out with the girl.
That was
interesting. Anyway,
so talk to us about your lifestyle when you came back. You started getting doing more Airbnb shit. You were moving around.
So
going on more dates.
Yeah, exactly.
What was it like?
Yeah, so Airbnb was a huge part, and like, I thought I was working really hard in New York, and then I started Airbnbing, and then I was like, holy shit, this is hustle. Because like, it was like, I would be like, okay, if I clean it myself, I make 60 extra bucks. So I was going to be, if I handle the keys myself. So I would like work around my lifestyle entirely to focus around Airbnb. So that was a big incentive. Plus it was freezing cold, and it was like January, February, March, those months. In addition to that, Patrick joined the group. So, and James joined the group. So we were going out a lot. So just hitting on girls all the time at night. We started having like a route that we took. Like we'd go to like Bon Bar, then like B Bar, then Ren or something like that, then like go to like Lower East Side and stuff like that. And we're going out like a lot. I think like two or three times a week at least, and oftentimes more than that. So that's when I had like the Balenciaga date story, which I posted in the group. I won't go too much into details of that. And I was actually doing pretty well. So the other part of this is I was going to Atlanta every other week. So in Atlanta, like I met a girl at the airport because she was a hostess, and then like we matched on Tinder after that. And she was like definitely still the hottest girl I've hooked up with. Super hot girl. And yeah, I was kind of dating her at the same time. Like, so it was like I was actually dating, like I was going on a lot of dates and going on and getting laid a lot more than I was before during that time. So that was kind of, like been since then. Then what happened? Then like Jesse came to New York, and then like he blew my mind again, like where like we were going to like clubs and stuff like that, or like dinner parties and stuff like that, where it was just insane the crowd that, and he really opened my mind up to like understanding social game. And then since then, I've kind of gone into like phase two of how to get better, which is I realized I need to make more money, and that's been kind of consuming a lot of my time lately. Like doing Airbnb, trying to get a job raise. That's why I'm taking this class right now. That's taking up like 10 hours of my week or more. So that's one thing I learned, is I need to make more money so I can hang out with ballers or better, or like more socially dynamic people, mm-hmm. I should say. The other thing is that I need to be better at conversation. So one of the things I've always been pretty good at being kind of witty, like clever improv, like banter stuff, but never been good at like entertaining, like tension building banter and stuff like that. So I've been working on that a lot. And
what you'll find in the advanced social dynamic sort of environment, you know, where you're at a dinner party, you're with a bunch of ballers, like, you know, you're out with people that do really cool shit,
yeah,
and have had amazing experiences. So like, if you can't, you know, if you can't carry your weight and also bring interesting experiences to the table and tell cool stories and be able to interact with people, you know, as peers, you're going to get left in the dust.
Exactly. And, yeah, and there's many times where I'm just like I put up my hands and I'm like, these guys are clearly way out of my league at this point. Right. But it's also a good learning experience. You see how they act. Right.
Yeah.
So I've seen Josh in action. I've seen Jesse in action. I've seen Amir in action, Donald in action. A lot of these guys. A lot of that stuff. So
what I've recently been doing, and I was talking to Tyler about this, I don't think I even showed you this, is that I've been really hyper-focusing my goals. So I think you posted, I think it was you, Robbie, that posted an article about, I think it was a PUA guy that was talking about, like, people are extremely right-tail at something. People that are good with women, they're either extremely right-tail at, like, social manipulation, or they're super rich, or they're super good-looking, right? You know, extremely right-tail at something. So I decided to put together a list of things that I wanted to be as a human being. Like, so one of the things, for example, is I wanted to be well-traveled and, like, gregarious and have a bunch of stories, right? Another thing is I wanted to be, like, extremely well-disciplined at, like, improvement and stuff like that. So since that, I've made a list of all the improvements I need to make, goals under that. So I've been working through those goals.
Mm-hmm.
I can share with people that process if you guys are interested. I know Tyler has said that he wants to do a blog post about it. I think that'd be really good.
Yeah,
for other people. So since then, I still have major holes in my game. I don't know if you want me to talk about that at all, but like right now my main goal is to pay off debt so I can go do more stuff, get more coaching with Robbie, and also to take another trip somewhere this year. And then my secondary goal is to start fighting. One of the things that I have a huge problem with is confrontation, and I feel like learning how to fight will be better for that. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but I think it is.
Well, it'll make you more confident in all your interactions.
Yeah. I won't be so scared of getting beat up. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff like that I'm working on. And three, I'm actually really focusing on my career, trying to figure out a way to make it so that I do have cool things. So one of the things is I hang out with Amir and Jesse and these guys, and a lot of these people have built companies and stuff like that. And I would like to build products. I don't know if I want to build a huge company, like, or I guess not huge, but, you know, like millions of dollars companies. But I think I'd like to build some products on the side, try to make some money. So I've been focusing on that stuff too.
So do you feel... One thing that I see happening, it happened to me, it's happened to a lot of guys who get to a certain level with this, their dating life, like the whole getting dates thing kind of fades away to where you're just going to get dates. You know, like it's not as, it doesn't feel like there's this huge effort anymore. You're meeting people kind of through your social circles. Sure, you're approaching, you're capitalizing on opportunities, but it just kind of naturally flows. Now, when I talked to Jason, couple of days ago, I just got into New York. I'm like, yo, what are you up to? He's like, well, I got, you know, dates four nights this week. I'm like, okay, clearly he's kind of hit that level.
Yeah, like I think I'm actually right below that level, because like I don't have like a super repeatable process other than like, I think part of it is just like in New York, it's easy to get dates.
Yeah.
Like if you guys ever, like, so, I mean, I don't know what other cities are like, but compared to LA, like your number of dates you can go on is probably double in New York just because of the lifestyle. Like in, like Tinder's easy to smash here, like, online dating super socially acceptable. You just run into people at bars. Like you have, if you have any social circle at all, you can pull some stuff from there. So I've been going on like kind of streaks of dating like that.
Yeah.
But I'm not necessarily in a position where like, if I say, this week I want to find a date for next week and I just approach like 50 girls, I'm guaranteed we'll get a date. Okay. But like, I know, but I'm close. Like I know, like I could get there. Right. Like I see that it's just a matter of putting reps at this point.
So when you look at your life now versus, you know, how it was in LA.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot better in many ways, right? Like, which is weird because my place in LA was much better. Like, my apartment was much better. I was doing, like, more, like, quote-unquote cool shit in terms of culturally relevant stuff, like going to concerts and, like, going to parties and stuff like that. But, like, my confidence level was a lot lower there. My understanding of where I want to go was much lower there or non-existent at all there. And, it's just been a way better experience in New York. And that's not to say that necessarily New York is better than LA or vice versa or anything like that. It's just literally like the approach I have to life has been much better in New York.
Right.
So.
Cool. Well, let's open up the questions. Do you guys have any questions for Jason? I'm sure you do. So if you're on mute, take yourself off and fire away.
So Jason, do you think you can articulate some of the body language things over the phone, or do you have to be in person?
One of the things that I noticed is that you want to stand slightly askew. Like, I don't know if I'm, like, you don't want to have perfect symmetry because it looks like you're, like, you know, almost like a military person. You want to be slightly, like, relaxed, like, almost like one foot slightly pointed out, maybe a little further than the other.
and then like your shoulders maybe slightly slumped. Like Jesse does this like huge head tilt thing, which I think might be partly because his neck is fucked up, but like but like it works, right? Especially since he's tall, right? So like Joel, you'll get a lot of more value out of like better body language. For example, when I met you, New York, so I don't know if you've gotten better, like just by keeping your shoulders back, you'll look so much more present. Like think of like lifting your chest up and your shoulders kind of back. And that will be like, but not in like an exaggerated way, but you know, that's kind of like the idea that I would say for you. Eye contact is like super important in general. I used to never look at people in the eye. I still have troubles with it. But I'm getting better at that. So that's another huge body language thing, being able to look people in the eye and say things confidently and without flinching. I'm holding gazes, like actually holding gazes for about a second or two longer is a huge powerful tool that most people probably don't realize. Otherwise it's kind of like, you just kind of got to watch people. I don't know. It's really hard to say on the phone. Sorry.
Yeah. Another thing that Jason is, you know, we didn't really talk about that much in this call, but just curious, how did you get into fashion and how did you become such an expert? That's a good question. I was always into like minimalism for a long time. And for a really long time, I was like, shit, I need to have like, so one of the things was, how do I find the highest quality shirts? And that turned into like finding like made to measure. And then that turned into like, what is the minimum wardrobe that I need to have? So I've always been obsessed by like finding minimum wardrobes and stuff like that. However, my style's evolved over the years. And since then I've kind of honed in on my style and just a lot of experimentation, right? Just trying to look cool. Being in LA, it's really looks-based culture. So like, even though like the fashion isn't as crazy as New York, I was doing a lot of experimentation with street fashion or like fashion or like conservative fashion and stuff like that. And then that turned into reading a lot on like quality of making clothes. So one of the things that I'm different than probably a lot of the other fashion experts, like Jesse, I had a discussion with Jesse about this, but Jesse's really into trends. Like he could tell you what went on in the Paris Fashion Week this year. For example, he was talking about Adidas shoes being really in this year. So I actually went out and bought a pair of Adidas shoes just so I could like fit in with the trends, but I'm much more into like classic fashion. So like, I was studying things like why does three button suits look better or worse than two button suits and vice versa, right? What is the deal with lapels? Like what is the construction? So I've always been really big into like construction quality. And for a long time, like I was like, maybe I should start a fashion business or something like that to do that. But it just came an interest as I learned more, I became more interested. It all started with trying to not buy shirts every like year.
That's an interesting way to get into it.
I didn't want to buy shirts for a year, and then I ended up spending like way more money on like finding styles and stuff. So it's kind of like a weird rabbit
hole. I mean, it's funny. I kind of got into it too. I'm certainly no expert, but I can, you know, I have a good enough grip on it where I know if someone's just like, shit, I know how to help someone redo their wardrobe. And it was also in an effort to be a minimalist.
Yeah. So. I think a lot of ways minimalism pervades your like starts taking over your life in many ways because you start looking for quality over quantity, one.
Yeah.
And two, you also try to think about things a lot harder because you want less of it.
Right.
Which is really weird.
It's hard to have less, but it's harder to have less and is that more.
Exactly.
Like it's kind of the same idea why Apple, I mean, this is a little bit of a stretch, but I read a book about Apple success and it's called, Simple, something about being simple. That's certainly not the name of the title. But their idea was what Apple did was they kept looking at how they could make their products more streamlined, more simple. And if you look at the iPhone, it's got one button, you know, besides the shit on the side, right? And so it's just incredibly intuitive, incredibly simple, and incredibly streamlined.
Everybody's copied Apple.
Exactly. But, you know, before Apple, it was like more complicated, more blow, you know, more shiny objects and, you know, whistles and all that bullshit. Yeah. Look at this feature. Look, this one has a pen and this one has this. So making your life simple is very difficult, actually.
Yeah, Jason, what's up? It's TJ.
What's up, man?
I know you were saying that Jesse's more into, like, the trends and everything, so I don't know how much, like, you follow that. But if you do, or whenever you're looking into it, what resources do you use to keep up on that? Because I have no idea where to look for that.
Yeah. So this is a little bit more complex of a question to
to be able to unravel, but I'll give you a few resources. So one, I use Pinterest a lot, actually. Two, there's like some style blogs I follow. And three, I use something called Style Forum, which is like a forum where people, it's kind of like a Reddit for fashion, fashion heads. Four, I look in New York, right? So living in New York is a huge advantage because I see what the trends are. And if you were in Paris, you'd be even one step ahead of that, right? So part of it is osmosis from that. Part of it is also like, TJ, you're really young. You're probably not yet defined your fashion style yet. And I would encourage you, even though it's probably going to waste some of your money, to experiment out with some different things and see how you like it. And I'll give you an example. Like, I look at Ben Wolf. Ben dresses like exactly for the type of environment he is, which is clubs. Like, he goes to tons of clubs. But I don't think, I almost guarantee you Ben Wolf did not dress like that like 10 years ago or whatever, like that.
No way.
Right. So like, he slowly evolved and tuned his fashion over time. Right. Same thing with Jesse. Jesse goes to really baller things like dinners at Nobu, clubs and stuff like that. So his style needs to be both at the same time business enough for him to have conversations about work, but also trendy enough so that he looks like he knows what the fuck he's doing. Right. So you'll never see Jesse in like a really business casual outfit, right? Like, you never would do that, right? Because that's just not his environment, right? Now, take me, for example. I've always like kind of outdoor sail-y stuff. So like a lot of my stuff is like very nautical, like friendly and stuff like that. And a lot more fit, a lot more clean, a lot more classic look to it. And that's just because that's what I do and that's what I hone. So I would encourage you to look and research different blogs and different people that you think have good fashion sense that you like and start copying them. For example, one of the people I like is Steve McQueen and Barber, which is a motorcycle guy, and he wears a lot of motorcycle stuff, and not necessarily that I buy those exact outfits, but I think that's really cool, right? Or I think fisherman, like high-end fashion is really cool. So I like toggle, like sweaters with toggles in them. I like nautical stripes a lot more than other people probably. That type of stuff, right? I also think British fashion is really dope. So I like my suits cut like British men, that type of stuff, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That's good stuff. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to hit me up, I can share with you some of the blogs I follow, on Facebook or whatever. And, you can try to start with there. Or if you want to just start looking yourself, it's fine. I know Amish talks about GQ a lot, and I think that's a really good resource as well. If you just want to pick up a bunch of GQ magazines, that's a really good entry point because it's kind of dressy, it's kind of trendy, kind of classic. So you can kind of like start there and move from to different places from there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, thanks.
What made the difference in your verbal game, like talking to girls at clubs and that stuff? Was there any one thing?
I think that's a constantly evolving thing for me. One thing that I think Tyler alluded to in his post, his workshop write-up, is that oftentimes talking less is better. And I've always been good at talking. Just I could talk someone's ear off. So that's never been a problem for me. But knowing when to pause, talking slower, that type of stuff has actually been more effective for me as I get better at it. Does that make sense? Or were you looking for something more specific than that?
Like your choice of topics with a new girl or so you said your goal became to be more gregarious and have more stories. Mm-hmm. Like, are there certain, like, how did you figure out what to say and what not to say? I mean, that's what I'm going through right now. Like, I'm saying some stupid shit and I want to cut that shit out. And, you know, maybe I should make notes on what works. I don't know. I was just wondering what your suggestions would be to hash this out.
Right. So I would do a few things. One is I've been working through something called the 100 questions exercise myself. Not necessarily that these are all your material, but one thing that you get out of it is being more conscious of, like, the type of questions you're asking. Because most likely if you're doing that exercise is what you do. You go, what are the questions I always ask? And then you list them out and you're like, wow, these are really dumb questions. Why do I ask these questions? And then you think of better questions and then you try to improve on there, right?
just doing that alone, even if you did just that and you forgot about the responses that she's supposed to say and then you're supposed to say back to them, that would improve your skill, being conscious of that, one. Two, the other thing I did was I started making a list of like things I consider strengths of mine, like Jesse calls them submission points. So like one of my submission points is I know a lot about food, right? So I want to steer conversations in that direction. Another submission point is that I've traveled quite a bit more than most people, maybe not the most, but like I've done some really cool things. And when I travel for long periods of time, like 3 weeks in one country, for example. So I have a lot of stories from that. So that's another submission point I have. So what I do is, you can almost imagine if you really wanted to get super organized, technical about this, you could have at the end, you could work yourself backwards and say like, or forwards, whichever you want, and talk about from your submission point, and then do the 100 questions exercise and almost map it to all of your submission points, right? So you could be like, you know, you could start from like, hey, what are you doing? Where are you going off to, right? And then like, she might have a blurb, and then like, based on that, you might have a response, and that becomes your next thing. And then that just daisy chains all the way into your submission point, right? And then from there, then you launch into a story. So if you want to get really, really disciplined about that, that's one way to approach it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Robbie's told me about a million times to do the 100 questions. I'll get right on it. Thank you.
I recommend, I try to do 4 a week. It's kind of like the one I've been trying to, although recently I've had to put it on hold because I have class now, and that's taking a lot of my time. But really helps.
All right, cool. Thank you.
As for the stupid stuff, I think you would probably get away with saying less too. Like, I don't know. I've never really had a problem saying, I've said superfluous stuff, but none of my stuff is really, really stupid. Like, doesn't make me look like an idiot. So unfortunately, I don't really have great advice on that, like, because I've never really experienced it. But
stupid stuff comes from trying too hard. You would just talk too much.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Also, just being educated on stuff, right? Like, conversation is one of the most difficult things to master because you want to be able to have a reasonable opinion on a lot of topics, right? And if you're not well-read, if you're not well-informed, you're not up and up, you're not going to have those things, right? So I have Flipboard. I use that. A lot of my Facebook friends are really well-knowledgeable people, and they give me a lot of good viewpoints on both sides, like Republican and Democrat. So I get a pretty wide view on my Facebook feed. I keep up and up on sports. I keep up and up on technology. And it's really important if you want to have dynamic conversations with a wide variety of people.
Wow, yeah, great advice. Thank you.
Any other questions, guys?
I could relate to your experience a lot, I think. Feels like I'm going through what you're going through in your beginning stages. I guess my question is, at what point are you starting to become happy with your dating life?
So every time I fill out that survey, I'm still below. Let me reframe that question in a better way. What would my dating life look like if I was happy with it? That's the way I would frame that point. And in my mind, I'm not necessarily obsessed with chasing after the hottest pussy in the world. But I want to feel confident enough that I have a process that if I follow, I will be able to generate dates from. That would make me very happy. Does that make sense? So I'm actually pretty close to that. I know if I smash another 1,000 reps, I think I would be there. But getting those reps in and doing all this other stuff is one of my biggest difficulties, is how to balance that. But here's the thing, right? Once I get there, I know I'm going to set the bar to the next milestone, right? So I don't want to say that like I'm ever happy at a certain point. What I want to say is that I think the happiness comes from the journey, which is really cliche, but like I want to always be setting that milestone further ahead and be able to be happy that I'm making progress, right? You know, like I want to set a goal, meet it. And it's not the goal that makes me happy. It's the fact that I said it and met it that makes me happy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So I know you used to weight train a lot, right? So like you must have had a very like strict progression of how you reach your next weight limit, right? Like I'm sure, especially if you're really good, right? You were probably not increasing weight for like a week or a month. It took you before you increase weight again, right? So
yeah.
But getting to that next weight is what drove you there, right? But it wasn't 405 that was like the thing, right? It was the fact that you set it at 405 and you made it there, right? And you followed the steps that you felt you needed to do to get there, right?
So your suggestion would be to set the goal and then.
Yes. So like you, let's say for you, you have difficulty approaching girls in general. Let's say that's your starting point. So maybe your goal is, I feel like I would feel happier if I could approach my girl, right? And then you just work on that. And then after you do that, then you say, my next goal is to approach 5 girls and not look like a complete idiot when I do it, right? Or, you know, whatever. So the fact that you're setting the goal and reaching them is actually what makes you happy, in my opinion.
Gotcha. So how long does it take you to have that realization that you're just happy with just meeting your own goals?
I don't know. That in of itself is something that I'm still working on. But I guess it's the same thing as a growth mindset. This basically goes hand in hand with that. And I started realizing that when I moved to New York and I was looking at, I read The Lean Startup, for example, and I read a lot of these other books that were basically talking about growth, like always constantly improving. And I've always been fascinated by that mentality. But when I realized that I could do that and apply it to my life, and not just professionally, but personally, that's when I started making these goals.
Gotcha. And earlier you mentioned that when you were working in Boeing, it was kind of like a dead-end job. So did your career suffer when you move into New York? So do you take like a lesser paying job?
I don't know if it was sideways. Technically I had less responsibility than I had at Boeing. Like Boeing, I was managing like $100 million budget for our IT operations there. But I was also in charge of, I had less money and less power from that perspective, but I had a lot more influence over what actually went on. So while it probably would be considered a downgrade in terms of like title, I felt it was an upgrade in terms of learning new things. That's one. Two is that I didn't take a pay cut because coming to New York is actually more expensive to live here. So I actually got a slight raise. But that being said, I was still underpaid relative to other equivalent people at my position. So like I came in as a senior project manager at the time it was called Wireless Generation, now it's called Amplify. I was getting paid, I think, $87,000 a year. Most people were getting paid around $100,000 a year for that same position. So put it in perspective.
Gotcha.
But part of the reason why I accepted it is because I wanted to come to New York, right? Like that was like a huge driving force. So I was willing to take a pay cut.
Yeah, nice.
You're in LA, you wanted to get to New York.
I was applying to about a job a day at least. I think I was more probably closer to 10 a week, and I did that for about 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah, it was full time. Another reason why I stopped working with you guys is that like I was so busy. It was like a full time job to do that and do my other job.
And you were really committed to getting your ass to New York.
Well, I was committed to getting out of LA at the time, but I also didn't know what I was willing to go back to programming. I was willing to go to project management, obviously, which I ended up doing. I was willing to look at like other sales type, like customer engagement, account management positions. It's not really sales. So like I had a really wide range of stuff to apply to, and there's probably stuff that I was not nearly qualified for, right? So.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think I'm actually in a similar position right now. Right now I work in a private company, but I'm looking to get into public accounting. But at the same time, that right now I'm 28.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if this is true or not, but I feel like after 27, you're kind of locked into similar fields. Like for example,
I will have a hard time moving out of tech, right? Like, I can stay within tech and I can do a lot of different roles within tech, but I'm not going to become a therapist at this point, or I'm not going to become a lawyer at this point, right? So you'll probably still need to stay in finance of some sort. And like you said, if your goal is just to go to like a big four or whatever, that's something you can do.
Yeah, except it's harder than I thought, because most of the big four or public accounting firm, they hire entry-level position out of college graduates. So those positions wouldn't even be available to someone that's more experienced.
Yeah. This is a little bit out of my depth range of like recommendation, but I definitely think what you should be doing is going to a lot more networking events. So here's the deal. Your story is not going to be a traditional story. So when someone looks at your resume and your like story on paper, they're going to judge you on probably negatively in many ways, unless they're a really open-minded company. And last I checked, big four people are not. But you're going to have a better chance of like meeting someone at an event that is in the field that you're in, selling them on your story and selling them on you, and then they have them put in a good word. I think that you'd have a better chance doing that.
That's what I told you too, kid.
Which means that you got to polish up your story.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, something to take away, like, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that you had to do 6 months of applying for 10 jobs a week before you got to move to New York.
Yeah.
That's not a fucking coincidence, but it's not easy.
Yeah.
Like, how I moved to New York, well, a lot easier because I'm an entrepreneur and I could do what I was doing in LA and New York. But at the time, when I moved here in May of 2012, I didn't really have a fucking plan. In fact, Inner Confidence had gone from a company making six figures a year down to a company that was making, like, I think right around, let's see, in early 2012, I almost like closed down the business. I at one time I had one client. Like I basically just let the whole thing kind of fall apart. And I was really just focusing on losing weight. I was playing a lot of poker and I was just like, just kind of over it at the time. And I needed to like relaunch the website. I wasn't going to let it die, but I knew I was okay just letting the revenue go to like zero. And you know, I knew I had poker to fall back on and other stuff, so I put away some money. And when I moved out to New York, the only reason I was able to do that is because my sister had her second bedroom open up. My younger sister, she lives here in shitty ass Midtown. She had her second bedroom open up, and I basically structured a deal where I would help her lose weight in exchange for like reduced rent, and I got my parents to pay the rent that I wasn't going to pay to her. So I broke her a deal. So
you're basically having your parents pay your rent while you're living in New York.
Sort of, because they really wanted me to help her lose weight. They were like, willing to do anything.
They were paying you, and she paid you in reduced rent, and they paid you for like her training fee, basically.
Yeah, essentially. So that's a big
fact. That's a Jewish like hustle thing.
I was not going to ask my parents for money. I had money. I just didn't want to, like, I couldn't, like, go and pay that rent. I was like, I need to get paid. I'm going to help my sister lose weight. It's going to be, like, a daily thing. I need to get paid. And she couldn't afford to do it. So I enrolled my parents in the idea because they really wanted to see her lose weight, too. And then as soon as I got here, I really started hustling with Inner Confidence. I built it back up. You know, started hanging out with Jesse a lot more after Europe. We basically traveled through Europe. I was here for a month and a half, 2 months. Then we went to Europe together for 3 months. And that's really when I built Inner Confidence back up in Europe. I was doing sales calls while traveling around. I spoke at 21 conventions, both in London and at the end of that trip in Austin. Came back to, you know, Texas and spoke there. And then came back to New York. And then Inner Confidence basically grew back up to what it was and surpassed what it was since then. But, you know, same story. I had to really hustle to figure it out. Moving to New York City isn't easy. Everyone wants to do it. So, all right, guys. Any other questions?
Yeah, if you have time, Jason, like you said, you were risk averse, and then you you did your first Airbnb? Like, how did you get the courage, or how did you take that?
It's completely terrifying. And actually, right now, I'm dealing with some, like, shit with my landlord. I mean, I made a lot of money on the place, so there's no regrets from that perspective, but no, it's still completely terrifying. I don't know. Like, it's just a lot of money invested in one thing. And when, like, so one thing I did do for this next investment is I spread out the risk amongst some friends. And my goal is to get multiple properties so that, like, for example, let's say you have five people instead of five individual people getting one property, you have five people invest one fifth of five properties, right? So that if you lose one, then you still have the four other properties making you money, right? So there are things that I'm learning to reduce risk, but it's also a learning experience for me. Like, part of it was like, if I fuck up this one, then I learned a lot from it, right? So, and there's definitely things that I would easily do differently this time around. But yeah, no, like, I'm still very risk averse, and it's something that I'm trying to get better at. So I don't think I'm like, I don't think I have like a clear answer to be like, this is how you get rid of it.
Okay, so you had the fear and you just did it anyway?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, the other thing about me that is...
Here's the thing that you have to understand about being risk-averse and risk-loving. I'm kind of naturally a more risk-loving person. I don't know. Actually, when I was a little kid, I wouldn't even go down the slide. Like,
really?
I've always been very, very cautious in situations that I could get bodily harmed. I don't take a lot of risk there, but I did play sports like hockey, so I don't know. But, you know, you're going to have your risk profile, but most people that are afraid to take a risk is simply because they're thinking about the situation wrong. They're not seeing all the variables. All they're seeing is the downside. And they're not using math to make those decisions. They're just, you know, just kind of blindly saying, oh, well, I've heard that's bad. They're not investigating it further. They're not thinking in terms of math. And if you use, you know, the skills that you learned last weekend at the Complete Man workshop, and you look at every decision through that lens of, you know, how is this a mathematical decision? How can I best, you know, figure out what the odds of are me, you know, in that situation I gave where you can either park in a lot or you can risk parking on the street and getting a ticket, right? Like, you have to try to figure out what are the odds of me getting that ticket versus just blindly going and parking the lot because that's what society tells you to do, right? So you really have to be mindful, take some time and look at those situations and challenge, you know, the stupid belief systems are out there. Like, you ask 1,000 people on the street, you know, is it socially acceptable to hit on a girl walking down the street wearing headphones or on her phone or just, you know, going to work? They're all going to say no, because that's what society has told them. But if you ask me, I can tell you 8 million reasons why that's actually the best thing to do and how to do it and to minimize all that risk that you're scared of. So it's more about being smart, I think, than it is about anything else.
Let me take you through why I decided to do it with this place, and maybe that'll help you understand why a risk-averse person would, like, do something pretty risky. One, I had talked extensively with Jesse, and Mike, from the time I first talked to Jesse about and picked his brain on Airbnb in LA, by the time I got my Airbnb place up and running, it was 9 months. So it wasn't like I heard about it and I just did it, right? So in those 9 months, I did a few things. One was I put together a business plan for it. My whole entire deal was I was going to try to get other people to invest in that plan, including my parents and some other people and some other friends, right? So I put together a plan. I did research on, like, the Airbnb prices there. I did research on, average housing costs and stuff like that. And I was trying to showcase, like, what I would be making a year, including fees and stuff like that. So I actually did a lot of that work. My scariest part was, like, what if I didn't think of something, right? Like, because, like, the first time you do something, as a risk-averse person, you're almost always what's going to go wrong. And at a certain point, I decided that, like, I wanted to learn how to get better at taking risk and making side hustles and stuff like that. And part of that was being willing to fail. So the reason why I did that is because I was willing to lose the money I invested in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. So I got it. Totally. Thanks.
That being said, my stress level has been way higher since I've got this Airbnb place. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but it's also been like the most enjoyable money I've made. Because I don't know if that, it's like correlation, right? Where you feel like your skin's in the game. So everything you do, you're like worried about, right?
Any other questions, guys? I think we'll cut it off there. We're going to go hit on some bitches now. So thanks, Jason. It's awesome having you come on and share your knowledge.
If you guys have additional questions, feel free to PM me.
Yeah. Post in the group.
Yeah, or post in the group.
Cool, guys. I will see you guys this weekend or talk to you on Sunday. Later.